Hey, security peeps, we are live with another edition of Breaking Into Cybersecurity. It is CISO Thursdays, and the entire crew is here. I am Renee Small, cybersecurity super recruiter, helping awesome leaders hire great talent. Please subscribe to our YouTube channel, follow us, connect with us, all that good stuff. Naomi Buckwalter.
Yes, that's my name. Hello. Hi, everyone. We were on time today. I just want to say we were on time.
Three of us were on time. Yeah.
You know, we have one guy that chronically shows up late and leaves early. He's literally the guy who shows up to eat, get dessert, and just leave.
No, Chris, you're a value add. We're all busy, but I was proud of myself for being on time today. That's all.
We're usually all in between meetings. So, Mr. Azar.
Sawatika.
Happy to have you here with us today.
I'm happy to be here today.
Chris Afolo.
Hey, everyone. Happy to be here. Late as I may be.
Yes. Better late than never. That's what I always say. Okay, folks. So Chris is going to kick it off today. We are going, before he kicks it off, we will talk a little bit about James's brand new shirt that he can wear.
Wounded Warrior Project.
We're going to make him talk about the Wounded Warrior Project, how far along he is, how far along he's gotten. Oh, brother.
If we hit the goal, this is the fit.
OMG. We got to donate. Bring more money, guys. More money, more money.
Donate, this is donate, the fit. For the goal, for reaching the goal. I will wear this to any show. I will wear this all week. If you want,
let's get a teaser now, James. Just put on the hat.
Yeah,
just
put
on. You know what? I've invested so much in my beautifully done hair today, and that I'm a bit concerned. But isn't this hat awesome?
It's pretty cool.
It's star spangled great.
America.
We should all get those hats. Sean McGinn says, "My peeps." Yes, we are here, Sean. Jonathan says, "Hello, hi, Jonathan. Good afternoon." So we are going to kick it off with Mr. Fulon today.
Well, so I will actually kick it off with an update from the 2021. I know initially we were going back and forth, but what I wanted to say is over the weekend, I posted an update as to my findings. So if you've submitted your resume or you're thinking of submitting your resume, you can look at that post. Because what I found is that almost every resume has these three common themes. You need to describe yourself better in your summary or executive summary up at the top as to what you're looking for, what value you bring, and how you can benefit a company. The next thing, down in the work experience, just don't list all the things you do on a day-to-day basis. Like, what value do you bring? What results have you done? What changes have you implemented? How have you helped that company over someone else that would have just been in there just doing the same things over and over? Stand out from the crowd. Don't just try to fit in. And if you don't have experience and you're trying to get your first role, what research have you done? What things have you discovered that can help solve company problems? Like, work on those types of things. I did 10 resumes over the weekend, and those were like the common themes that I saw. So far, I mean, we had over 300 resumes submitted. We have over 160 of them reviewed. We've had 14 hires declared thus far. I know someone's in this group have to update the list.
So there's three more people that were hired as of this morning. Okay, Chris, three people as of this morning. We also have two hiring managers in the database looking at your CVs and deciding whether or not they want to interview you. So submit your CVs if you're not getting exposure. My goal is to bring more and more hiring managers, more and more of my CISO peers, to take a glance at this and maybe pick a few people they want to interview for roles they have in mind, even before they post the job. So that we can get you hired. Our goal is to get to 221 in 2021. We don't stop. Momentum is still there. We got to do it. Period. End of discussion.
Sean says he thinks you're actually starting to look like the new attire.
Starting to like my new attire.
Starting to like your new attire.
You know, I don't know if you saw the podcast I did with Ron Green that I posted on Wednesday. I'm wearing this awesome blue and white paisley. I'm actually considering like sporting it for a few more events.
Yeah, like a wedding. I'm telling you,
that blue and white is hot.
You guys should really check it out. I mean, it's pretty good.
That's for you, James. It's hot on you. You are the king.
It is a
sick king. Y'all, I had a lot of coffee this morning. I had a lot of time with my six-year-old.
You got a new house.
All right. So, Chris, so I wanted to add in, Chris, I think those are fantastic recommendations. And just wanted to add in because, you know, I haven't seen any of them, to be honest. But what I've seen over time is that the project part, I know, bad me, the life, right? So I will make sure by the end of the year, I will get in there and do some resumes for you guys. However, some of the things that I've seen and some of the things that Chris touched on are some of the comments that were made during our CIO talk earlier this week. We had the Ohio Turnpike CIO come on. He was amazing, and he's going to be coming back. His name is Brian Kelly. And what he talked about was, you know, making sure you volunteer. So when Chris talks about the, you know, when you're new and you're trying to break in and you don't have any projects and you're trying to think of what to put on there, he gave some really good recommendations. He talked about volunteer efforts, you know, joining organizations like InfraGuard, joining other nonprofit organizations, helping out, helping people, helping small businesses potentially on a volunteer basis. And then, as I always talk about, the self-directed projects. So all the projects that you're doing at home, your home lab, turn that into your job description or your, you know, your experience, because that's what it is. So I just want to add that in. So Chris, I know you're going to kick it off today with an upcoming project that you are working on, and we'll take it from there.
Yes. So I was asked to help facilitate a learning lab at RSA with Sunil Young, who is now a CISO, but he created a matrix that allows companies or individuals to analyze how products or things fit into the cyber perspective with regards to people, process, and technology, as well as how it fits into the NIST CSF. So what I would recommend for individuals that are looking to learn more about the cyber defense matrix is to go look it up and see how you can implement something like that. See how you can talk about how a specific product relates to the identify, detect, prevent, recover spectrum of CSF, and whether it is more people-focused, process-focused, or technology-focused. And if you could give a summary of that to like a hiring manager within an interview, it will separate you from someone that can just say, oh, well, EDR does this, but then you don't realize all the back-end requirements of what EDR does and the impact that it has on an organization to function. James, have you ever looked at the cyber defense matrix from a CISO perspective?
So I use my friend Ross's Young's TASM. The first time I've looked at it was when you shared it with me about an hour ago. So I use TASM, and which is a OWASP project that Ross Young, the CISO over at Caterpillar, did. And I map that to NIST because the TASM is essentially a mix of OWASP and NIST. And then I added MITRE, you know, to the framework. Essentially, as I identify vendors, I look at, you know, how MITRE attack looks at the escalation of a specific aspect of it, and then, you know, map that to capabilities of a vendor.
Yeah. And Sunil also did work with OWASP to have that as one of the projects over there. And I'm going to post that in the links in just a little bit for those that are looking to learn more And we'll actually post the links for the safeguard, the project threat and safeguard matrix, which Naomi is going to post shortly as well. But the whole point of all these different frameworks is that they allow you to describe the threat landscape and how you would approach tackling a certain situation. And especially if you're new to this industry and you can't have these types of conversations with hiring managers, brush up on these topics. And they could be your own self-directed research project that you can recommend to implement to an organization. They haven't considered such an approach before. Yeah, I see Naomi nodding her head.
Yeah, I was just saying, I was looking at this to bring in front of my senior leadership team because they want an easy way to understand threats and how it matrixes in with all the risks. So I think it's a really, really easy way to understand what kind of threats there are for your organization. Fits really well with like small and mid-sized companies. And here's the thing, if you are looking for a volunteer project, you can always volunteer for this open web application security project, OWASP. You can help with that. So get your name out there and put network with people. This is one way to do it. You don't have to be super technical. You can just be like proofread, right? You can contribute that way too. That's all.
Anything else you want to add?
So I will say this. I kind of want to take this conversation to the side of when we look at tools mapping to problems, there's one common kind of, I want to say, there's an Achilles heel for every CISO, and that is that we have way too many vendors, not enough implementation of products, and we end up in a position where we're trying to solve problems, and we've got all these different appliances and tools in our environments, and we don't really know the full capabilities of all of them because they become very, very difficult to manage. And so using tools like this really does help you eliminate duplications maybe that don't really help you, because if you've got three things recognizing one threat that, you know, and that threat's not as risky, then it's, you know, it's not an effective, you know, use of funds or resources.
And that was the whole idea behind like the cyber defense matrix, is where does a certain tool play within the environment? What does it do? Is it more people intensive? Is it more technology intensive? What processes need to be developed for this to be effective? And in regards to, if you look at it from start to finish, when an attack might start to finish, where does that tool come into play? Does it need a tool to help it identify the threat and then that helps with the remediation? Or is it feeding into another process? And if you understand that life cycle from the attack life cycle, then you can better understand the full situation.
I got to tell you, something that was really fascinating with what you shared with me that I've been complaining about for a little while, and then this just, like, I'm taking a screenshot of this and I'm sending it across, is how many vendors are focused on the identify and protect aspect of it, and how few are looking at respond and recover and invest very little money in that. It's like everyone's like, we want to be here to help you stop it, but no one's there to help you recover. I think it's like I think even in today's marketplace, there's maybe three or four companies that are actual, like, that's their designation. That's the only thing they do is respond and recover.
And that's exactly the point of this matrix, is for that you can see where your strengths and weaknesses are and allow you to see if you're truly covering the whole gamut of this. And most people, when they go into, say, for example, doing a CSF assessment, they don't take that next step to see where all the gaps are. They focus, like you said, the identify and defend. But then what happens when you do have that NotPetya and you're looking to recover? If you haven't planned that out, if you haven't seen your tool coverage or your process coverage or your people coverage in those recovery phases, then you can't properly recover at the end of it.
Yeah, that's a great point, which is you've got to know how to defend, and you've got to know how to recover from something. And I think a lot of times we spend so much time on identify that we forget about all the rest.
Naomi.
I keep nodding my head. I agree with everything you're saying. I'm in the middle of a project right now, creating a security roadmap for my company. So taking a look at all the risks, mapping it to a CSF like NIST, and then overlaying it with the threat. So security is the probability of something happening times its impact. And our whole entire goal is to limit the impact. So as long as you're recovering and responding within the moment that you're identifying something, you're limiting the impact of that exploit or vulnerability from taking any kind of money away from your business. And that's what we really want. We want to tell the business what the risks are in very simple language. And if we can show them and use a matrix like this, that's very well done. And just plain English, right? Explain to the business folks in plain English and they understand things easily. You don't want to throw technical terms and make up your own language with them. That hurts you. So use plain English, talk in business terms, money always talks, and tell them very plainly, here are the risks and how much it will cost if something were to happen, or and how much it would cost to fix it. And then you have pure numbers. And what I always like to tell my fellow CISOs is make sure you're using data to drive your decisions, not emotions, because your emotions can fluctuate from day to day. Like for me, it's like that time of the month, you know, right, ladies? Just to make you feel really, men have it too. Great, I don't feel that awkward. So you want to use data to drive your decisions. I'm just trying to make Chris laugh. Get your data to drive decisions. Well, that way, and like, here's the thing, when you're bringing, you know, you calculate probability in your impact, right? I used to open fair framework. They have a tool out there. It's app.fairu.net. Super free, super easy to use. It uses the Monte Carlo simulation to calculate probability of a risk. And then you multiply that with the impact. So the dollars possibly lost. Like, I feel like I explain this all the time to my executive team. But the idea is like you have data to show them. And no one, like almost no one argues with the numbers. They're like, oh yeah, you calculate those numbers. Great. But then when you go and you bring an emotion to it, you're like, you know, I feel like we need a sim, right? And then people are like, okay, why, right? Then you need the data behind it. Like, here's how much money it could cost us if we don't detect and respond in a timely manner and stuff like that. So as long as you're bringing in data and not emotion, you will get the backing of your business folks. That's it.
You bring up such an important point. I'm teaching a class right now on risk management, and too much have the students focused on just summarizing the academic summary of risk management. And I keep asking them, okay, so what's the impact to the business? Like, you're doing this assessment, you have a business scenario. What is the risk that you're trying to mitigate, and what is the impact to the business, and how will your mitigation reduce that impact? And if you can't talk to that in a real world scenario, you can't communicate with the business, because that's all they care about, right? There's a potential to lose $1 million. Spending $50,000 will reduce that to losing $500,000 to them. That's a great investment, because you're only spending $50,000 to reduce the impact of $500,000. That's a great return on investment for them. So to be able to talk in those terms to the business is really impactful.
I think so. So here's one misconception that people have is people, we look at security. We've always looked at security from a risk perspective, right? So we've always been investing money, like we need $5 million to reduce $50 million worth of risk. Sounds like a pretty decent investment. You're investing 10% to reduce 90% of your risk. That's, in a lot of books, this makes a lot of sense. But in today's world, in the reality of the business world today, the risk is no longer the main objective. And I say that because I want to point out almost every major recent breach, and all of those have shown one common thing. Companies don't go under. Clients rarely leave, right? There's some reputational fallback, but it goes away with the news cycle. The moment the news cycle refreshes in 24 hours, it's pretty much gone. Who do you hear talking about SolarWinds outside of the industry salespeople who are just trying to tell you that, you know, you don't want to be like SolarWinds, do you? Who do you hear talk about it? Or Microsoft Exchange, who do you hear talk about it? CodeCov, that's going on right now. Who do you hear talk about it if you're not impacted by it? You don't. There's very little to it. The risk is not anymore in the reputational aspect of it, because the business has now understood that you get a good PR, you have a good, you know, incident response plan, you go out there, you get ahead of it, you let the news cycle die, game over, right? And you move on.
and you move on to the next best thing. Now it's about business continuity. Can I continue to run my business while I'm going through an event? And that's no longer about investing money in risk versus reward perspective. Now it's about how much do I need to invest to be resilient, to face all the different challenges that are going my organization's going to face from a software supply chain perspective, because I think that's the new big business resiliency, you know, challenge that we're all having the conversations on, all the way down to customer acquisition and revenue, where we're seeing a lot of attacks going down the financial sphere, especially from North Korea and Iran, who've been emboldened in the last year just to go ahead and relaunch. Kind of, we had about a year of, I'd say, a little bit of quiet from them, a little bit. I'm not saying a significant decrease, but now they're back at it, and they're threat actors. We know that several of the new ransomware strains that we've seen in the last 30 days have all been powered by the Iranian Revolutionary Guard and North Korea.
I mean, take a look at the Peloton API leaks. Yeah. Outside of the nerds that really care about it, like the average Peloton consumer doesn't seem to care that their information's being leaked out by their fitness app. What they did care about was the recall and the safety issues with some of the treadmills, but don't even get me started on the lack of parental controls over their kids that led to that. But the API story went under the water, and everyone's focused on the recall because their information's out there already, and they have such breach fatigue, alert fatigue. Like, it's just another day, another story that's going to disappear.
One thing we're forgetting is that when cybercrime wins and they get money from ransomware payments and everything, like, where is that money actually going? Have we ever actually considered this? Like, it's funding more cybercrime, and cybercrime does have real life consequences. I heard a story, I think in the New York Times published this, but a victim was murdered. Crime scene photos were taken, and the crime scene photos were stolen from the police. Right. And so the police refused to pay the criminals to make sure that those pictures never got leaked. But since the police refused, who did the criminals go to? They went to the victim's family for payment. And so, like, you're seeing real life consequences of people having to make these decisions because our police departments are terrible at, you know, cybersecurity, our schools, our hospitals, and we're losing the war on cybercrime, and real people's lives are being impacted, not just this one family who, I don't know whatever happened. I didn't finish reading that story because paywalls. But the idea is, like, we want to be able to make sure we're winning the fight against cybercrime because there are real life consequences. It's not just data, but all that money is being funded to something. Human trafficking, right? Illegal firearms trades. Wars are being funded by this cybercrime.
Terror.
Yeah. And this is real life
consequences. Disinformation campaign.
Exactly. Yeah. And like, we're seeing this whole, like, social media hatred of the left versus right. Like, this is fueling our own demise. So we need to be really careful here. We're not just considering, this is not just data that's already out there. It's already being leaked. Like, the public doesn't understand. This is going to affect every little thing of your life. And so we need to be careful.
So one thing about Peloton, Chris, and I know you've got to leave, so I'm going to make this very quick, okay? The Peloton, the whole issue around Peloton is it shows you very poor corporate culture. They had poor corporate culture when it came to their IT security and IT safety and IT integrity and resiliency. And then they've got poor corporate culture when it came to product recall. They fought the recall for months on end, 70 people injured. One kid is dead as a result of this, right? And furthermore, we know that the sitting president of the United States uses a Peloton. We know that there are members of Congress and Senate and people within the DOD that use Peloton. And that information, those things have now been put out there for the grand world to see. So, the Peloton story to me is just a tip of an iceberg of a very, very bad or of just careless. It's extreme growth and careless attention to detail on behalf of the company.
I mean, I read another headline. I didn't go into the story, but it leads back to the same thing where there's a story based on troop movement in the Middle East leaked by apps, smartwatch apps that are denoting your location. And wait, didn't this happen a couple years ago? Wasn't it another smart device? Like these things are going to continue to happen, and our military will have to decide, like, how much freedom are they going to allow soldiers to wear off-the-shelf devices?
Especially, exactly. You should have no freedom. You shouldn't be allowed to take anything that's yours that isn't owned and issued by the U.S. military into the battlefield. In my days, you got a military-issued device, and that was it. It's all you're going to get out there. You don't get to take your cameras. You know, today I see soldiers like in Iraq. I remember like 10 years after our discharge, I was sitting with a group of veterans. And, you know, these are all fresh people, a year or so out of service. And they've all got selfies of them on top of tanks and Humvees and all kinds of stuff and battle zones. And I'm like, my stuff's still classified. I can't even look at it. Like, what's going on here? When did we become so loose with data?
They're like on Facebook and stuff. I know. I see it all the time. Like, oh, I guess things have changed. Bye, Chris.
Bye, Chris. Bye,
you're
Chris.
Awesome.
Okay, folks, a couple comments in here. Johnny says, this topic is a great conversation. Rachel, oof, I walked into some heavy necessities. I don't know who this is, but helping SMEs with the need of cybersecurity. And Clinton Walker says, hello, guys. He almost missed the session. Great to see you guys.
I think the overall point we're trying to make here, everyone who's listening, and thank you for listening, is the fact that security culture needs to be easy enough to understand. Like, we need security to be everyone's responsibility, right? It's not just the cyber geeks and the techies and the people who think they're smart enough, right? The gatekeepers, but it really is everyone. If we're teaching our youngest children to stay private, not to chat with strangers online, like, imagine the compounding effect that they can have. So there, you know, our children teach their children, and the generations after learn how good security looks like, good privacy looks like, and we won't have as many breaches just because everybody, no matter what your job is, you're considering the angle of the threat. And so you're doing your job. Might as well be a liberal arts degree in a sales role. I did it first. So you can be anyone. You can be anyone doing any kind of job, but you will have security implications, and you want to be doing security in your everyday job, even though you're not a professional security person. Leave that to the real cybersecurity professionals. Like, there's going to be a need for those. But in general, cybersecurity is everyone's responsibility. We need to make it accessible enough and easy to understand so everyone knows it's part of their job. It's like, how is there a war? There's a war analogy here, right? Like, when we're fighting an enemy and they're like invading, like, doesn't everyone have a job to like lock their doors and not let in? I don't even know, James. Like, you tell me. Like,
so a lot of times we look at cyber warfare and cyber crime and want to compare it to a traditional battle of sorts between two evident adversaries. But the battlefield has changed, right? We no longer fight traditional wars. Like, even from the military perspective, we stopped fighting traditional wars 20 years ago. In 4 months and 5 days, we'll bow our heads for the 20th time for the 9/11 attacks. So just take that and let that sink in. And for the last 20 years, we have not fought a traditional war.
Wow, I can't believe that was 20 years ago. You're right.
Right? We're fighting an enemy, even on the battlefield today, that dresses like you and I, looks like you and I, and hides behind civilians. So cybercrime is essentially the manifestation of what happened in the battlefield into the online world without any of the down risks of being shot and killed in an actual war zone, right? The only time a cyber semi-military unit was taken off the battlefield was during the conflict a few years ago between Israel and Hamas, when Hamas was launching cyber attacks. Israel discovered the building they were launching the attacks from and just dropped the missile and took out Hamas's entire cyber unit. Like, literally, they blew them to shreds and pieces. And that was the only time cyber criminals have actually paid with crime with their lives by military action. So
I wanted to add that, sorry, go ahead, James.
So taking that war analogy, we have to understand that we're fighting an invisible enemy who looks just like you and me. They set up, I mean, we know that phishing through email is less effective now. So they've transitioned to social media and they've transitioned to a platform we're on right now, LinkedIn. Every single person who's watching us on LinkedIn has received a message from someone that sounds too good to be true, right? And one of the phishing things that we actually discovered from a threat intel perspective from our organization, and I'll be talking about it next week on my show, is the fake certs. So I'll take the cert for you so you pass it. Some of those are actual PII company info, a watering hole attacks where they're trying to get your credentials and get as much information on you as possible in order to be able to successfully spearfish within the organization.
Wow. I report those all the time, but LinkedIn is always like, oh, that's not a thing, right? Like, do you report those? I report and block all the time.
So I've stopped reporting stuff to social media platforms because okay. I've stopped expecting them to have the common sense I have. They don't. I did multiple shows in the Middle East and I got so much anti-Semitic stuff. It wasn't even funny. Mm-hmm. And I reported all of it and the anti-Semitic comments on the videos I did for those podcasts and for those TV shows are still there.
Oof.
So I take zero things as social media platforms as a way for them to do it. If you know, it's just, I have zero expectations.
Yeah. I mean, not even touching on the fact that the oversight board for Facebook yesterday making that non-decision, like we don't even have to talk about that.
Hey, we hired you guys to make a decision. And what did you do? You took our money and they're threw the
decision. And it was like $3 billion. No, it was $100 million to make this board.
Exactly.
Give me that money. I'll make a decision for you in 2 seconds.
Yeah.
Couple more comments coming in. Hey, everyone. I don't know who this is, but they're saying this is amazing. This should be more live shows like this. Very informative. Thank you. Thank you for listening. Quick question. Johnny says, is there a prominent company that has promoted being completely secure from any cyber attacks?
They're not prominent if they've said it.
Yeah, because that's just unrealistic. Got to learn a lot from you guys. This is Ronick, Dave. He says, I got to learn a lot from you guys in layman's language and understood it all.
Oh, cool.
So all of it, which is really cool. But Naomi, to some of the points that you guys were making earlier, mm-hmm. you know, two things that I wanted to add in. One, when you talk about cyber, you know, not just the geeks and the everyone pretty much understanding that cyber is a part of their life, a part of their role. I think at some point there will be like some critical mass, like something will happen. And it could be that, you know, as you were talking, I was thinking about, again, the Ohio Turnpike CIO that was on that was talking about the autonomous vehicles and how those are coming, how there's going to be this massive flip, you know, where right now between 70, each car that's coming off the, you know, every single car that's coming out now has between 70 and 100 million lines of code. So he talks about it being a roving data center, another attack vector, and this will impact every single individual who is riding or driving in a car. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, there likely will be some kind of unfortunate, some situation where everyone's eyes will open up that, okay, this is not just a data thing. This is not just a, you know, geek thing. This is an everyone, you know, we're all impacted. And I think that, you know, something big like that will happen because at this point, like you said, it's a new breach. Oh, well, you know, new news cycle, new thing. Even Naomi, the stuff that you talked about with the murder is horrible, but you know, like every single person, it's not impacting them. When every single person gets impacted by their IoT fridge or, you know, something, you know,
Skynet, yeah.
You know, or their vehicle or something like that, then everyone will be like, okay, just like I have to lock the door, just like I tell my child, don't talk to strangers, things like that. Now I'm going to have to be cyber aware because I won't have a choice.
If I were to guess, it's going to be public infrastructure first because that OT stuff is just not done well with security. Like we saw the recent by the Super Bowl, right? The water treatment facility down in Florida. That was a close call. And I think that person was just messing around. Like they just spiked up some chemical or whatever. And thank God someone caught it before it actually got in. So the idea, What happened, James?
We talked about that.
It wasn't someone messing around. It was not someone messing around.
It was a Russia or China?
It wasn't a Russian thing. Will people stop saying Russia for everything?
I love Russia. It's probably China.
Okay, can we just agree that while Russia's an adversary and a very worthy one, China's the biggest threat to our nation. And if you disagree with me, I'll tell you.
I agree.
China is building the largest navy. They're bulking up against Taiwan. They've taken over a sovereign country in Hong Kong. They've broken every international treaty in the process.
Yes.
Do I need to keep, I don't
know. Well, no, they want to destroy democracy and make everyone live the way that they do. So for people who don't believe this,
last week, some very, very brave people out of China released some speeches, local speeches that have been given by President Xi, who's the, you know, kind of de facto king.
Lifelong president.
Right. He's the Putin of China. And in his speeches, he talks about how these were from 2016, 17, and 18 of China's plan to control the global internet by setting a Chinese standard. And if you folks for one second think that some of that hasn't trickled down here, you know, when I say I don't have any faith in social media anymore, I have stuff to reach that conclusion, because some of the stuff they talk about and some of the methods they deploy, we see them today being used.
Domination through diplomacy.
Domination through diplomacy without firing a shot.
Exactly.
And letting people shoot each other while you're standing on the
platform. And you know what's really scary? The youth of China now, they're completely bought into the party. Like, their lives are great. They didn't suffer like the generations before. Like, my family immigrated to America from China, right? So they had to escape the Red Army and stuff. But the kids these days, they don't know anything about that. They only think of Tiananmen Square. They only think of that as like a person standing in front of the tank. They don't actually hear the rest of the story of like the murder of students. Like, no one ever hears about that, because the students in China, they grew up thinking like, oh, my life is great, so China must be great. So they're like all into this party. Like, they're like all into it, man.
Well,
they,
it's
like,
indoctrination from
the school. I know, but they love it. They like, they do the tours. Like, Tiananmen Square today, every single day, they do the flag raising thing and they do the marching thing. Like, at 7 a.m., there's crowds of people, young people, who just wait for that to happen every single day. And, like, to me, that's really scary, because they don't know the danger of China. I will just say it. Like, it's crazy.
Yeah.
So David Dinger says, Russia and China are very different threats. Certainly, China is the bigger long-term threat, but our strongest allies are concerned about Russia.
Well, the European allies are concerned about Russia because of Russia's traditional way of looking at, you know, Finland, Norway, Denmark, Germany, Poland, etc., because they have interest in that part of the world. They've had interest since the Soviet Union fell and the Berlin Wall came down. They've had interest. I've been to parts of Poland and Germany that were under Soviet rule. And then you go to parts of Germany, like West Germany, and you go to East Germany, and man, it's night and day. Like, it's like architecture, mentality, people, food. You're in the same country, but you're not, right? Mm-hmm. It's night and day if you get to travel that. And while I get people are concerned about Russia, Russia has no interest in invading anyone but the Ukraine, because of the natural resources that are available in the Ukraine, because of the long history between Russia and the Ukraine. This is kind of like a internal Russian thing. China sees world domination. Russia isn't trying to indoctrinate their program globally. China is looking at the continent of Africa and sees that's how we're going to feed the people of China. It's not how we're going to take care of the people of Africa. Right. They're looking at the continent of Africa and saying, this is where we will farm. That's why they're building these airports in random spots in Africa. That's why they're taking all these ports, is because that's how they plan to ensure food security for their people, right? Through Africa.
And I love how you know this, because I only know this because I read magazines like The Economist, which is a really good source for world news. Like, the problem with our news here, we get our CNN or MSNBC, like the fake news media, they don't tell us the full story of what's going on in the world. Like, we don't see the bigger picture because we're so focused on stupid things. Like, we focus on the left versus right, whatever Trump said the other day. Like, we just freak out about it. Meanwhile, people are actually dying because of, like, who they were born into, like the Uyghur Muslims, right, over that territory there. And like China's going in there, imprisoning like an entire country, like countryside, and then putting them in prison and work camps and stuff. And no one cares about millions. I know. Like I couldn't even tell you what's going on there because I don't know. I only get like third party accounts from random places.
Look at the attack on, look at the DDoS attack that happened on Tuesday in Belgium, where they took China took down the entire Belnet internet.
Oh yeah, that's right. But we don't hear about that.
In Belgium. And people said, well, we don't know where the DDoS came from. Every single media story retracted it.
Yep.
Retracted the story.
Yeah.
I called out people who I know and I appreciate. And I was like, you're a coward. Leave the headline in there. There was a hearing in Belgium with people who were able to escape the Uyghur Muslim concentration camps in China and were there to testify about the atrocities and the things that were happening there. This, folks, as a Jew of a family who were in concentration camps in Europe by Nazi Germany, I'm never one that's quick to draw the whole Nazi thing, right? Because I think that people throw that around way too lightly, like everything that is semi you don't agree with. If they don't agree with your point of view, they're Nazis. You know, that's really the misuse of the word. But China is actively using the German playbook against the Muslim Uyghur minority in their country, and no one's lifting a finger or calling it. Even Islamic nations aren't standing up for their brothers. But God forbid you draw a picture of Muhammad in a free speech newspaper.
France.
You go in and shoot up a Charlie Hebdo office.
God, Jesus.
Yeah.
Right? But China's massacring Muslims and enslaving them.
We have real problems to deal with. Yeah. Like, I feel like the cybersecurity, like I'm just like entry-level cybersecurity people need to be hired. Like I feel like that is so disingenuous when I know people are dying out there for like real stupid reasons. Like,
but we as cybersecurity people, we actually have power. We do. Yeah. We are able to secure and build a free speech platform that really allows for us to share this stuff and not in some right-left way, but rather in the human way.
I wish that were true. We fight each other so much.
I don't like, fight people I disagree with. Yes,
we love you, James. We love you. But the second you say something like cybersecurity is not difficult, what do you get? People calling you a whore online. Like, excuse my language, but like that is ridiculous. We're on the same freaking team.
Yeah.
Yeah, but this is the difference between what I like to call bravery. So, and I call it bravery and slavery, okay? And I mean it in the form of people who are enslaved in a specific way of thinking and working. And then there's the bravery, which are the people who stormed Normandy and Omaha Beach in World War II, knowing that they were probably going to die. And they still did it. And so, you know, we're missing a lot of that bravery today, Naomi. You have that bravery because you're willing to come out and do a post. And when someone calls you that, you do a pretty good job of just saying like, whatever. It's almost like water, like washing off of me, right? It's offensive. I get hit with anti-Semitic stuff all day long, right? I mean, I do. I don't talk about it, but I can't tell you how many people who one day like look me up a little bit and all of a sudden see a picture of me wearing my tefillin or wearing my prayer shawl. I'll get people that'll write, be like, oh, you're one of those dirty Jews. Okay, wonderful. You know, go F yourself. Maybe you should have, you know, burnt and maybe they should have burned your entire family in the gas chambers.
Oh my God.
Like I've gotten that, you know, I get that almost daily in some form or fashion. Right. But we have to rise beyond that. Right. And to me, it's not about right or left. It's really not. And it's not about your political point of view. I look at cybersecurity as my mission in life. It's where I'm able to influence the next generation and the generation after and after that, not just by securing my organization, but by actually promoting people and teaching people to understand the freedoms that they have, that they can exercise, and not allowing those to be infringed by anyone. I talk about privacy more than anyone else. I've written letters in support of companies that have done the right thing, like what Signal just did. If you're still on WhatsApp after the most recent subpoena that Signal got, and you call yourself a technologist or a security guy, shame on you and turn in the card. Shame on you and turn in the card.
And into your CISSP.
Oh, Lord. Johnny wants to know, where do you get your information, James? I'm guessing not The Economist.
I
read The Economist. I like The Economist.
I don't. So I look at, I read multiple sources, and then I look, I'm a history guy. So I have a lot of books, and I read a lot of books, and I read a lot of history. And so to me, history's, I'm able to form things based on history. I also look at, you know, the general geopolitical climates of different leaders. I've done extensive studies on MBS and Saudi. I've done extensive studies on President Xi in China and on President Putin in Russia, on Prime Minister Netanyahu in Israel, and over there, what we're witnessing in the last few days in Israel is unbelievable. Netanyahu has not been able to form a government, and now there might be the first government formed in Israel in over 30 years that will represent all sides of the aisle and not just one. So there could be a government that's formed with the support of the Arab minority, which would be almost 30 years in the making prior to the Oslo Accords, with a right-wing coalition and a center-left coalition. And that would be harmony. I don't know how long that government will last, you know, but nonetheless.
Aren't they on that, like, their fourth one in 4 years or something?
This is their fourth election in 2 years.
2 years,
and
okay.
If they can't form a government within 27 days, then they go to fifth elections in 2.5 years. Yeah.
Yeah, James is legit. He's the real thing.
Yeah, James is the real deal. Who says this? Ronick says, Russia is not a threat if looked from the macroeconomic perspective and considering their economy.
Well done, smart man.
Yeah, yes. It's China. China laughed at us, by the way. Remember the insurrection? Who can forget? So they replayed the video. They were laughing at us. They're like, look at these jokers. These idiots can't get
this. They were laughing at the guy with the, like, dressed like a buffalo, right?
The shaman.
Yeah.
But they were laughing at America.
But they still laugh at America. Hell, they laugh at Biden every single day. Have you seen they air Biden's gaffes
on
TV? Our media doesn't do it, but they do.
Yeah.
We have problems in this country, I'm telling you. We just don't get along for the
We're fighting the world for all the wrong reasons.
That's exactly what it is in cybersecurity. Like, we're fighting each other more than we fight the criminals. It's so stupid.
It's the dumbest thing. Mm-hmm. And I think I made a comment on either your post or Chris's post where I'm like, we're doing all of this and they're training babies in these other places, 5, 6, 7, 8 year olds, so that when we say we have 20 million or how many ever million open positions, how many ever years from now, because cyber is so hard and we have to take 8 years to figure it out, their 16 year olds will be really have 10 years experience, like real deal 10 years experience.
You know what the problem is? People, you ready for this one? Too many people take liberal arts degrees.
Got it.
And not real STEM stuff. So you don't see liberal arts in Russia and China as being a viable degree in higher education.
You don't.
Or in India, right? They're saying you need to go learn something that's going to make you money.
Yeah.
Now, you want to do liberal arts, that's fine. Do it after you're making money.
After the fact. It's true. You're absolutely right.
We do everything backwards sometimes because we've lost, you know, I think it was President Reagan that said that freedom is one generation away from being taken, right? And I'm Paris quoting this one, but we're literally at a place where this fourth industrial revolution that we're going through now, this is literally the first industrial revolution that threatens your freedoms, because every single one thereafter gave people freedom. The invention of cars gave you freedom, right? Now you could travel somewhere faster, not on a horse, and not risk your life. You know how many people used to die going from, like, Florida to Ohio on a horse in a carriage?
That's what we were just talking about on Tuesday.
Not everything's a Tarantino movie, right? Like, not everything's a Tarantino movie.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. No, you're right. I mean, that's what the Ohio Turnpike CIO was talking. He was giving us the history, the 1894 manure crisis, converting to cars, how many horses would die, how many people would die, how much manure was in the street, and that like massive flip. And so, you know, that's the one of the
think topics. Of autonomous cars. Think of like autonomous cars. Because I had this discussion with someone here in Peachtree Corners in Georgia. We have an autonomous car vehicle lane where they test autonomous cars in. It's like literally a lane on a street. Like I've driven by sometimes where there'd be a car with like someone sitting inside of it, but they're on a computer. They're not driving it. The car's navigating itself through, right? And we talked about what happens when you put in an address to go to a business and the car decides, no, that's a Trump supporter. You can go to that business. No, no, no. You need to go to this business, right?
It could happen. We laugh now, but
no, I'm serious. Like this is the first revolution of industry where instead of freeing people, it's enslaving people.
Yeah, like how many people are like stuck on their phones? You know, like we are just so into our phones and our screens and yelling at each other through our screens.
For it's so all not the healthy. Wrong reasons. No analytical thinking is going on.
No critical thinking at
all. No critical thinking. Yeah. And to your point, Naomi, and a reason why I love you both is the data and the history. You know, like nobody's looking back. Everybody's into clickbait. And when you said MSNBC, CNN, Fox, all that, you know, it's just I call it reality TV. Like I'm like
they love like people just
reality TV.
I call all mainstream media the retraction mob because they write stories and then they have to retract them all the like
you're like never mind.
When was the last time you've read a story on the New York Times or Post that hasn't been edited three or four times in the footnotes saying this story was changed from this.
No one ever.
Oh, we updated. Oh, we updated. Because everyone wants fast, quick, click, click. Like clickbait. That's it.
They just want
to strip the media of their immunity so I can fix the media. Mm. Right? Because like Project Veritas, like I love James O'Keefe and what Project Veritas is doing because they're suing the Times, the Post, they're suing all of them and they're deposing them and they're putting those depositions online. And you want to go see how they had a New York Times deposition there of a New York Times editor that said, yeah, we knew it was wrong when we posted it, but we just posted it anyways. Yeah, we know that our, we're writing a story, but it's really an opinion piece, but it's under a news story. Yeah. Like all of that's available on Project Veritas.
Basically
like,
all primetime news channels are opinions. Right, everyone thinks it's news.
Opinions. Yeah. But you know what? It's news.
It's totally
news. What's his name? Tucker Carlson or something? Like I don't watch him, but people love him. They're like, oh, he tells it like it is. I'm like, excuse me.
It's reality TV.
Yeah, but like,
but it's but his opinion.
Yeah, but there's no critical thinking. There's no critical thinking. They're like, why are they trying to tell us this? What's really happening here? It's the elites, the people with the money, power and control, power and control. That's all it's about.
You know what I'm curious about? How many people actually watch that? Because after when the new administration came in, they lost like all of these, mainstream news media, they lost like millions of viewers
because Trump was their news cycle. Like he was so interested. They wanted him to keep doing the stupid stuff he's doing. They're like, he's great TV.
He's awesome TV. So then it went down. So it's just like, and I thought about this I was like, I wonder what's going to happen to these people if, you know, President Trump gets, you know, is voted out and a new president, like, what are they going to do? Because the last 6 years has just been, you know, talking about him getting there, him being there, he's the worst, blah, 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 you know, and everything else that they carried on with or the best, depending on where you are, all of that had been going on. And it kind of got tired. And I'm wondering how many people just turned away from that stuff and said, like, okay, I can see right through this. And let me go actually look for some news with some facts, with some two real sides that I can make a decision about. Because it's so bizarre to watch.
What CNN does today, I don't know if you've watched CNN over the last like since Biden's been elected. CNN's coverage is around what Fox News says. Is around what CNN says.
Yeah, they just argue.
MSNBC's coverage is around whatever someone on Twitter said.
Yeah, right? It's like a rebuttal. They're not
reporting the news.
There's no news anymore.
Right?
It's not news.
And now, Trump now, like on his website, he puts out like these essentially tweets on his website.
His own social
and
media.
So now they've kind of like gone to like DonaldJTrump.com.
Yeah.
And now they go, look what he just said. He just called Liz Cheney so-and-so. And so now that's back.
I really want someone
to go to Mar-a-Lago and just cut Trump's access to the internet.
Yeah.
Let them die and burn so we can rebuild.
Obscurity. Yeah, we need.
Unreal. It's unreal. Okay, Nelson says, this conversation is hardcore, but you guys are right on point. It's hard to sit here and say, what can I do to help? But James is exactly right that the cyber war is where we can get involved to help. Then we had a comment up here. Martinez said hi from sunny London.
That happens 10 times a year.
Yeah, it's not raining. I think to Nelson's point, Nelson was asking, you know, what can I do to help? This is exactly it. You're trying to start conversations with people and you're listening to both sides of the argument. So if you're thinking, hey, cybersecurity really does need more elitism or it needs more smart people or whatever, like whatever your stance is, think about the other side. Like think about the pros and cons, think about the arguments for and against what you're trying to say. And then just really critically think about like why you have that stance. Because once you start opening up your mind into thinking like, hey, maybe I'm wrong about this, or like, what's the other side thinking? And everyone has a reason why they think a certain way. So like, consider both sides, make a little like evidence column for yourself, and you're like, what really is the truth here? And so we want to have these conversations and be open to negative feedback too. And like, the more the conversation that you can have with other people, the better we will be.
All right, we are at 2:00. I just want to put up Martina's comment because he has been here for such a while. Hey, at last he got us live. He's just a podcast listener. And just to change the subject, how to find a mentor, how to approach a mentor. He listens to our podcast and LinkedIn posts, and he's still not sure how to approach a mentor. Naomi, that one is for you.
Approaching mentors. Here's the thing. There's plenty of people who are willing to mentor. You just have to ask. There are going to be people who are like, oh, I can't, you know, I'm too busy. Now you might have just caught them at the wrong time, but you can even start within your own organization, really find someone who's maybe in security and just be like, hey, I just want a 20-minute conversation. Do you have time for coffee? And you start building small relationships that way. They might introduce you to someone else because you're interested in this one thing, and they'll get you hooked up. And that's really what networking looks like. It's like when somebody else helps you out and gives you other references and you follow up with them. And you're just a very good professional, right? You reply to emails quickly and you say, hey, yeah, I'd love a 20-minute professional conversation. And that's all it takes. It's nothing huge. Just be prepared for someone to say no to you and don't take that personally. But just keep putting yourself out there. Don't give up. It really is grit. And, you know, just keep going at it. Yeah.
And you can have more than one. Don't expect one person to help
I just
you.
Want to say one thing before, because I have to drop here in just a moment. Happy Mother's Day to both of you, Renee and Naomi, because Mother's Day is on Sunday.
Thank you. That's so right. Mother's Day is
on Sunday. About that.
Yeah. Go love your moms this weekend.
Thank you. Thank you. All right, folks.
All right.
Thank you all for being here. This was an awesome discussion. Loved having this. See you guys next week at another CISO Thursday and maybe potentially another CIO, CTO leadership series. Also, I am speaking tomorrow at the Hue conference, talking about what we learned from interviewing 200 people on cybersecurity on this podcast. It's probably 300 at this point. So if you have not checked out the Hue conference, check it out, HUE conference. It's mostly for women, or it's a whole conference with speakers who are women of color. So.
Awesome.
This is awesomeness. Have a great day, everybody, and we'll see you next time. Bye.
Cheers.
Bye.